Look so much alike anyway. I think we could have at least changed colors or something or anything. What? Oh, production crew. Okay. Hey, I'm Jason.
Hey, I'm Mike.
And we're coming back to talk more about Exchange. And we're going to dive in now to the mailbox role and talk about the mailbox role. You know, before we get started, this is, if you've worked with Exchange 2007 or 2010, this is very, there's a lot of things that are very similar here, but there's been some new additions
as well. Yeah. There's a lot of similarities, and there's a considerable amount of differences. So.
Okay, did you just repeat what I just
said?
Exactly.
Okay. Yep. Just wanted to summarize.
So let's get started here with the slide. This will be configuring the mailbox servers and recipients. And maybe Mike can help us out with some of the new recipients that are in here as well. As an overview, folks, we're going to look at the looking at the mailbox server. Talk briefly about planning for some of your storage. There is a calculator out that the out on the team blog, I think, that we could go out and look at. We'll also look at managing the recipients, a little bit of address list and policy information. And of course, we're going to do lots of demos this section. So,
lots of demos.
Hang on, here we go. First of all, let's start off with an overview of managing the mailbox server. And Mike, I think the first, the paramount thing is, first of all, before we can do any management, is to understand what tool sets we have. And I have to say that starting with Exchange 2013, if you've been working with Exchange, we can wave goodbye to the management console.
Yep, it's
and
gone.
Now the management console is gone. And some you say that, and some guys will go, uh-oh, I'm PowerShell only now? What do I do? Well, learn PowerShell.
Yeah, that's a good place to start. I mean, you gotta start understanding that that's going to be requirements sometimes. But
we
do have graphical tools.
But we do have graphical tools. And so we've got this, we're going to have you do a demo here, but we've got a new Exchange Administration Center web-based management tool, which I have to tell you, I really like much better than the older management console. I have found it both easier to find things and the fact that I have access from practically any device, right, to manage my Exchange environment.
Yeah, it looks great on your Surface as well.
That's
key.
Okay, product promo there. It looks great on your Surface.
Yep.
And we also, and I also...
But yeah, I mean, if you worked in the ECP, the Exchange Control Panel in 2010,
the web-based,
there were some things you could do as an administrator in there. But this looks and feels very similar, but we've just put everything else, for the most part, in there. We use the 80-20 rule, basically. Put the common stuff in there. There's going to be stuff where you're going to have to drop into the shell, probably, for some things. But really, the big stuff that you've got to do in the GUI, most of the time, it'll be in there. Is that enough of a dodge? There's a ton of stuff you can do in there. I mean, if you look at the ECP in 2010 versus the EAC in 2010, very similar look and feel, kind of, like, in terms of the administration, but way more stuff.
Way more stuff in the new management tool. And you brought it up, so I'm also going to ask you to kind of show this, too. We'll start off with the web-based one, but you also brought it up. We are going to have to dive into the Exchange Management Shell at some point.
Yeah, you know, and that's pretty much where I always dive. I just try to stay there constantly. But I'm biased. I like PowerShell a lot. But
I think, you know...
You will find me clicking around the GUI, trying to find stuff because I'm so used to being command line.
Using it command line. And this is just something, if you're starting out with Exchange or if you're starting out with PowerShell, we're going to give you some tips and tricks on this. First of all, Exchange, when 2007 came out, Exchange 2007 was kind of the moment for
that's
command line management.
When I got the message.
Yeah.
Because I've always been a big Exchange guy. And then when 2007 came out, I was like, oh,
yeah,
I need to
surprise.
Figure out this PowerShell thing.
So just to let you guys know, there are a couple of jump starts on PowerShell if you need to get started on that, because he's not going to spend so much time on here's how PowerShell works. It's going to be more like, whammo, there's how you do it in Exchange. So
Well,
why don't we get started here with a demonstration of, why don't you show us some of the new management tools, like this new graphical web manager. Just kind of give us a quick...
So one of the things just to throw out there right away is that when you install Exchange, you know, you can do the management tools on a workstation just like you could before.
Right.
You can do that. Pretty much what you end up with, let me go to the start menu here, just before I dive into the stuff. You get the toolbox and you get the management shell shortcut.
Wait a minute, I'm kind of not seeing something there, Mike. I'm not seeing, okay, the toolbox, is the toolbox where this new Exchange Administration Center is? Why am I not seeing?
Let's launch this. Toolbox, right? So we've got two things. That's all you're going to see. So you run this guy, this is going to kind of look like something you're familiar with. It's the old MMC style. Right? It's loading, right? It's but on the left-hand side, we used to see all of the nodes for organization and server and recipients on the left.
Right. Now all we have is here's a few things. The templates editor, a remote connectivity analyzer that we'll mention later, and the queue viewer. That's it.
Yep.
So this is not where the management tool is.
Yeah, so if you come in here after an install, or you install the tools on your workstation and you go to manage Exchange and you get, you know, you launch this thing and you're like, okay, well, I'm not sure what to do. I could go to PowerShell and do everything command line, but I don't know PowerShell, so now what? You'll poke around, you'll use Bing to figure out that we have a new management tool, the web-based one, the EAC, Exchange Administration Center.
And we're not going to help you by putting a shortcut on here, so.
Not yet. I don't know. Maybe someday there will be one. I'm not saying there will be.
I'm not slamming anything. I'm just saying.
Hey.
So how do I get to this tool?
So you got to go into Internet Explorer. You got to go to your Exchange server. So let's do HTTPS EX2013. I stuck with the really easy naming conventions.
Apparently. Exchange for your org name.
So we've got two 2013 servers, A and B.
So you got A and B. Okay, great.
Now here comes the confusing part, maybe, for some people. It's slash.
So it's EAC, right?
Well, the tool's name is Exchange Administration Center. We also refer to it in the documentation and blog posts as the EAC.
Yeah.
But you got to make sure in the browser you don't do this, EAC, in the actual address bar, because that's not going to work. You need to do the old way, which you would have done as a 2010 administrator, and go to the ECP.
ECP. Okay, because I know this is one of the things that throws a lot of guys off, is that they're looking for the new EAC.
Right.
They try the URL, so it's using the formerly known as ECP URL.
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay. So let me log in here. And these are all VMs. We talked about running labs and stuff like that. These are all VMs that are running on a smaller Hyper-V host, so there may be times where it's a little slow. Let me log in as administrator. Now, this is going to be important. You got to pay attention to this real quick, because this is going to be a little strange. So blue, right? Exchange 2013 is always blue. This says Exchange Admin Center.
I'm with you.
We got redirected to the OWA forms-based authentication screen. That's not a big deal. When we sign in, we should go into the EAC, all right? So click on this. Now it's not blue anymore, right?
Wait a second, because in my lab, I have a VM in my lab environment, and it goes right into the EAC. This looks like the old ECP to me.
Right, you've got the Manage My Organization. So here's the thing. My administrator is an administrator for Exchange, but his mailbox is still on 2010.
Oh, so if you have Exchange 2013 in coexistence, which we're going to be talking about later this afternoon, you do right now.
Exactly.
Your administrator mailbox is still on 2010, so it redirected you or proxied you?
It actually proxied the connection to my 2010 server, the server where my mailbox is active.
And it gave you the old administrative screen.
But the thing is I need to manage 2013.
Right, so how do you get to the new one if it's going to send you back to the old one for 2010. Right.
So here's another interesting thing. We don't proxy. Well, here's two things. There's no ECP in 2007.
Okay.
So if your mailbox is on 2007, you're going to get an error.
Oh, okay.
All right. So we don't proxy OWA anyway, which is similar to ECP to 2007. There's no proxy for that. So you'll get an error if your mailbox is on 2007. If you're on 2010 and you need to force the 2013 version, you need to customize the query string in the URL. So you got to do one of these numbers.
Ooh, highlight important tip or trick, because this is going to happen to you in real life, right?
Yeah. Unless you're doing a scratch install. Yeah, exactly. So you do this little query string, exch ver equals 15.
Okay, so you're doing ?exch ver equals 15. Oh, telling it to go to Exchange version 15. Okay.
Yeah, and this is in our release notes. It's documented out there. It's just not obvious when it happens to you what's going on, especially if you get the error because your mailbox is still on 2007. So anyways, watch out for that. And you could even bookmark this.
Oh, so you don't have to keep typing
it again. And let me just start from scratch so this thing doesn't get too confused.
Yeah, sticky browser.
Right.
Dun, 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 dun. Well, I see you built an excellent performing Exchange box, by the way.
That's right.
Thank you. I appreciate
it. Yeah, I wanted to roll it out.
There
the best of resources. All 4 gigs of RAM. So, all right, let's try to sign in again with the query string in place. And
oops. Oh, there's the query.
You know what? I actually forgot. It's EXCH client version.
Client version, okay.
See, guys, even now I can screw this up. There we go.
Oh, now this is
I didn't even need to restart the browser. But that's a good point, because this is going to have to be manually typed unless you create a bookmark. So don't mistype it like me. There you go. Well, I actually planned that.
Did you really?
Yeah, because I wanted to show that, you know, I'm human.
Well, thank God for Bing, because the right answer's on Bing, right?
Right.
Okay,
right.
Good. So,
okay. There we go.
So why don't you show us around here a little bit?
Yeah, so this is something that you could never do in ECP before, which would be come here and create a mailbox. You could see mailboxes. But,
yeah,
you know, look at what we have on the left.
So on the left,
recipients.
Yeah, you've reorganized a lot of stuff here. And it actually makes a lot more sense now.
Yeah, and some of the stuff you'll see in here and you'll recognize it from the old control panel. You get the same options.
Because, like, recipients looks kind of similar with the things that we would see underneath recipients in the old one.
Right. Yeah, and if you double-click on this guy, you get the properties page, obviously.
Okay.
So you can come in here and do a lot of the same things you did before. This is obviously in a newer design, so, you know, it's a little bright, but the left-hand side is your navigation menu when you're in all of these things. So when you're in the properties of this mailbox, you come over here, see how much mailbox is being used, you know, that kind of thing. Change settings, look at email addresses, add additional if you need to, things like that.
A lot more convenient than trying to tab, you know, surfing all the tabs. You'd right-click stuff and surf all the tabs looking for things. So,
that's, you know, some basic. Here's where you create a mailbox type of thing.
And we're going to be going through a lot of these different sections in here today. I really like the new organization. I think it's a lot more efficient.
We're just introducing the tools, right? We're not actually starting to create recipients and stuff like that yet.
Yeah, and so we'll do that in a second. Yeah. But why don't you also, so we've got the EAC. Thanks for the trick on getting into the EAC.
Yeah.
How about showing us the Exchange Management Shell? Of course, I live and breathe for this part, but.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So we looked at the start screen earlier. You're gonna have Exchange Management Shell shortcut, just like you always have. So that's gonna start PowerShell.exe, and it's gonna load up an Exchange specific environment. Exchange commandlets, some shell variables. You're gonna basically get to a screen like this. Tells you what machine you're connected to. The big thing with this environment is that even though you might only have one server, and you're on that server running the shell, like I am here, we're still gonna do a remote connection to that server. Every single instance when you run this, it's through a remote session.
Okay, that's interesting. And so we're going through a remote session to whatever server you're doing, no matter what. You're getting all the commands and all the server variables specific for Exchange when you use the Exchange Management Shell.
Right.
But you have another trick. What if I'm sitting on a box like my client machine and I just want to manage Exchange real quick, but I don't happen to have the Exchange Management tools? You have some PowerShell trick or something that would let me do this, right?
Well, it's not mine trick.
Well, yeah, but you've got one of the most famous blogs on doing this. So I'm just pointing out.
Yeah, we need to look at that, because you might be in a situation, especially if you're managing Office 365 Exchange Online, where you just want to fire up a shell, hit Exchange Online, because you're going to have, in that situation, a blue shell. You're not going to have this shortcut.
The shortcut for it.
But you can do that. Same thing with your on-premises servers. So let's just take a look at that real quick. If you were on a workstation, you didn't install the tools, or you just wanted to, you know, you're on the beach, VPN'd into the office. That's usually
Which I always have my laptop with
this
me
common
on the
theme
beach.
Of, yeah, there's this common theme of me trying to skip out of work, right? Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah,
it's not exactly. It's a surface, right?
Because I like, well, yeah, it's a surface, and the drinks with the little, so. Show us your trick. I love this trick.
Yeah, let's do this. Okay, let me fix the screen up a little bit here. So I could actually have this type of thing going, right?
So right now you just have a PowerShell console, like you're sitting on your workstation.
This could be Windows 8 machine, Windows 7, you know, pretty much anything that has PowerShell version 2 or higher.
Okay.
It could go high. It doesn't have to be just PowerShell version 2 or version 3 or anything like that. Because we're connecting remotely. So we're just connecting to the server through remote session. So this can be a box that doesn't have Exchange tools installed on it. And you just go into the blue shell. You've got a network connection, right?
Oh, bless you to the production guys.
Yeah. This guy's going to get us sick. That's great. No, I'm just kidding. You're fine.
So what you're doing right now is you're going to create...
Yeah, so let me explain what I'm doing here. $S is
a
creating a variable. $S is going to store an instance of a new session. So new PS session. Now, in the Exchange world, we implement kind of a... What you would... know as a custom endpoint or custom run space or constrained run space. It's kind of referred to it in all of those different ways. But basically, we're going to connect to kind of a custom PowerShell endpoint that's hosted in IIS on the Exchange server.
Because what you're doing right now is you're using a PowerShell remote in command, and usually we put in dash computer name and we
a session, but pretty much, so it's a little bit more involved than that because I got to tell it, hey, I want to connect to a specific configuration.
Okay.
That's Microsoft.exchange.
And this is the custom endpoint kind of thing.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, and then and typically in remoting, like on a Windows server, you're not going to IIS, but in this case, we're doing this implicit remoting thing where we're going out to the Exchange server. The endpoint's hosted in an application in IIS.
And actually, did I mention I was a web guy, by the way?
Yeah, this is your realm right here.
I know.
Now I'm speaking your language, right?
Yeah, there we go. When we get to the client access server and we show them the virtual directories, we can show them that there's a virtual directory called PowerShell, right?
That's right.
And that's what we're connecting to here.
And the interesting thing is your CAS is proxying everything, and that includes PowerShell. So when we did our multi-role install earlier, that's good, because if we would have tried to open PowerShell, if we only install CAS, there's nothing to proxy to.
Nothing to proxy to.
So the PowerShell virtual directory in IIS is what we're connecting to on the back-end server instance.
Okay.
So anyways, I'll keep going here. So I'm going to do HTTP, Exchange 20, I'm on 2013A, so let's connect to B. Let's prove that we're actually, and then we'll do the slash.
And that virtual directory is PowerShell.
Yep, exactly. And then actually that, I'm logged into the domain.
It, right? Yeah, you're logged
that should
the
do
domain.
It. So create that variable. Now $S, write it back out to the screen. That's an open and available session.
Okay.
And so.
Now show me the magic, man.
Yeah,
this is where
let's see the magic. So import PS session, right? $S. So go out to IIS, connect. This is where all the permissions magic happens. And this is really kind of what's happening as well when you start the shortcut. We're going out there and authenticating, and Exchange says, oh,
you're allowed to have, and we're going to talk about this when we get to security.
Right.
Here's what you're allowed to do.
Here's all the commandlets that you can use.
Exactly.
And if you're really cool, you get most of them.
And if you're not cool, you just get the ones I get. And then,
And if you watch closely, when I hit enter here, you'll see it importing commands. And that's basically local shortcuts to the commandlets that might be on the server where it's remote to me. But those are the ones that I can actually have permissions to and run. So it'll go out there. It'll say, hey, 500, 600, 700 commandlets.
And in PowerShell terms, this is called implicit remoting, just to let everybody know if they want to look it up. And this specifically, this is bringing in the Exchange stuff. Prove it. Show me that you have some Exchange commands.
Sure.
What do you?
Real quick, though, just to mention this, because I get people that get caught up on this. This thing, when you do this, it creates like a dynamic script module on the fly with this name. And if you don't have your execution policy set to allow scripting, it'll bomb out on you.
Great point.
It happens. We change that on the Exchange server. When we install Exchange, we change the execution policy to remote signed.
Great point.
And it's by default restricted, right?
So if you are doing this through PowerShell, you need to. You can do get dash execution policy to see what your current execution policy is. So that this script runs, it's recommended that you set dash execution policy to remote signed, and you should be able to get this to run.
And then it would run. Yeah. So. Well, now we'll prove it. So we import it, and you can see the exported commands. We've got Exchange-specific commandlets out here. But let's just do like a git mailbox. Git mailbox, and I've got tab completion, so that's a good sign.
Oh, yeah.
First demo, awesome. Didn't blow up.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. We can do a git mailbox on one guy. We can see that the administrator is still on 2010.
Okay.
So I'm connected to a 2013 Exchange server running PowerShell, but I can also see stuff that's on 2010.
And
if I do a git mailbox, verb-singular noun still means that we still get everything, right?
Everything,
or up to the first 1,000 with this
command.
Yeah, so you get them all. You can see that most of my folks are still out there on 2010. A couple, 2013.
Well, that's cool, because then we can do a migration this afternoon. That'll be fun.
Yeah. On my super fast smoke and lab environment.
Yeah, that'll
be done by like Friday.
So this is kind of cool. We've got a great graphical. No, it's kind of fun. You know, you work on the humor.
Yeah.
I'm a professional. Anyway, so we've got this great new graphical tool that is actually, I think, much better organized. And since it's web-based, I can practically be on any device, anywhere, anytime. We've got the Exchange Management Shell that comes with if you install all the tools. But even if you need to do some quick management of an Exchange box, and you happen to be at a box that doesn't have the management tools, instead of taking the 30 minutes to install them, you can just do this real quick.
Right.
You can even put those commands into a script real quick, just so you could run the script and get connected to Exchange.
Right. And the one thing I will say about this environment is super handy for real fast administration, just interactive. I need to jump in there, I need to make a couple changes, and then I need to get out. But if you're kind of working and doing some robust scripts and things like that, I usually use the full-blown shell instance because it's got all of the type information loaded. It gives me shell variables like $EXScripts will take you to the folder put all the scripts and all that. You know, so there's some nice things that that the actual real shell has, but the other one's
a great
option.
Which is a real good point. I mean, it's a good point. Well, I'll tell you what, you know, let's talk a little bit about storage for a couple of minutes here, because obviously we're going to need to create some databases and store our mailboxes, and we want to do some storage. And this is just kind of a quick review, I think, Mike, of some storage components.
Sure.
You know, what are some of the recommendations for Exchange on a SAN? And then this, you know, directly attached stuff. And one of my favorite things, and everybody thinks I'm crazy when I talk about this, but JBOD, it's one of my favorite kind of implementations. So start off with a SAN. I mean, Exchange works obviously plugged into a SAN for a mailbox role.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, the thing that that we did with 2007, giving you the ability to not even need a SAN.
Right.
You know, it's all about, I mean, really, you can run a SAN. That's fine. You can spend as much money as you want on storage. But the idea, the concept with DAGs is that every server has its own independent storage if you need that. And you can use commodity hardware to host these mailbox databases.
So one of the advantages is that we can get off of a SAN now. So that we may have been running into contention, right, with somebody putting SQL and everything else. Because IOPS, the input-output per second for the mailbox role, really matters.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we're gaining efficiencies with every release and
trimming
that down
release.
Big time.
Yeah,
but it gets better and better. But yeah, it's still a massive consideration. You know, you can cause serious performance problems by not planning appropriately. We're going to show how you would figure that out.
So you think that most guys should be, instead of trying to get it on a SAN, which they could use if they already have the investment, but should be looking more at direct attached? And the direct attached, specifically my favorite, JBOD.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, Exchange 2013 is built for Office 365. So that product is built to run in the cloud. It's built to run on servers with local storage. So it's not built to work with a SAN. You can definitely use a SAN, but when it comes to creating database copies, and creating DAGs,
when we get to the high,
you're
going to
have individual LUNs where those copies reside. So we're treating it as if it's individual. So yeah, you can use the SAN if you want, but you know, JBOD, just a bunch of disks, or you know, just a bunch of local disks. That you could run down to Fry's Electronics or wherever and just buy a cheap disk and pop it in there. There you go.
You're just a bunch of local disks.
There you go. Yeah, can change the acronym.
Yeah, really.
I don't know.
JBOD, though, also means that, and this is where guys will start kind of like poking fun at me. You know, a lot of guys, they'll put, you know, like three or four disks together and they'll run RAID 5, right? So they want them RAIDed.
Mm-hmm.
But JBOD is more of, well, we don't care anymore because we're going to go to high availability. And so why waste the time and effort with RAID? We mean literally just a bunch of disks.
Exactly.
We don't even have to have a RAID level set for it.
Yeah, put the intelligence into the product. Let the product protect the data.
That's what a great statement.
And that's where the Exchange team has focused all of their energy for, you know, ever since back to 2007.
And so when we get to the high availability stuff, really DAGs on JBOD is like screaming.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. You know, and like you said, we've reduced IOPS again by some new architecture changes in the store. And, you know, it's with each release, it's even more and more practical. But you can definitely do it. You can use desktop hard drives to host Exchange databases. That's the point of all of the architectural changes over the years.
So when you're thinking about your mailbox role specifically, we need some idea to how much space we're going to allocate. You know, how much disk space.
Right.
Am I going to kind of need? Now, obviously, every environment's going to be different because it's going to be based upon the current recipient mailbox sizes, what your size limitations for a mailbox might be, whether you are archiving off. All of those kind of factors come into play. But a couple of critical issues are, you know, the recipient's mailbox size, obviously, is probably a big one. And plus some of the disaster recovery things like single item recovery, if we have that enabled, will affect size.
Yeah, it's really, you know, it's really, this is the determining factor in what drives your design, is the mailbox profile. I mean, it's gonna determine how much storage you need, you know, and the features that you pick with it, obviously, you know, the single item recovery, how long do you wanna have single item recovery? We'll talk about what that is, but, you know, archives are basically secondary mailboxes. How big do you need that to be? How much are you gonna use? So that all determines what you need to plan for. But, you know, that's not just for storage. It's also for how much CPU do we need to accommodate all of these changes going on in the mailbox? How much memory do we need to load all of this stuff into memory? So you start with profiling your mailboxes. That's the key to this. And that's probably the trickiest part, is figuring out, what do we really have out there? You know, what do we have in terms of sent and received items per day for our users? How big are those items on average? And then how big do we want to make the mailboxes? How much do we want to support for a max mailbox size or a max archive mailbox? So you got to calculate all of that stuff and then create a design that will accommodate all of that, not just in terms of capacity, but also in terms of IOPS.
Now, is the Exchange team on their blog, they have a calculator. Does that help calculate?
Yes, but you need to have an idea,
of
what your users are doing, like in terms of their mail profile. And then, you know, the calculator gives you four ways to plug in, or I think it's four, we'll take a look at it, but you can download, I'll show you how to download it. But basically, you can plug in VIP profiles, you know, you can have power user, you know, end user that doesn't really do a whole lot of mail, that kind of thing. So you can have different user profiles.
Why don't you show everybody where that is? Because sure. Then we'll start managing some mailboxes so they can see this calculator.
And let me just throw a shout out real quick to another guy here at Microsoft that has a really great blog post on coming up with profiling some of this.
Oh, yeah. This would be real helpful.
And I hate to keep going into PowerShell and being a PowerShell shill here, but you got to
do
it.
I'm gonna
Bing this guy's blog. I don't have the URL. It's Neil Johnson. He's a Microsoft Consulting Services consultant. He's also an author of a recent Exchange 2013 book on designing and deploying Exchange 2013.
Ooh, okay.
But if you do Neil Johnson message profile script, and I'm just doing this off the top of my head, here you go. First, see? It's all about how good you can search.
Yeah,
it is. That's really the key to your success as an engineer. Did you come up with this good search? Because there's the answer.
If you can Bing it, then
there you go.
That's the
You're
way.
Good to go. Anyways, go to this blog. He talks in here about the fact that we used to have an old tool called the Exchange Profile Analyzer.
Right.
That would
right,
give you these
that.
Stats. It would say, hey, you know, your end user population is average of 1,000 sent and received items per day. They're 75K in size on average, and you want to do 2 gig mailboxes for every user. Plug that information into the calculator, and now you've figured out what you need.
What you need.
So what he talks about in this blog is basically that requirement. He talks about the fact that the old profile analyzer was a WebDAV-based tool, and we don't have WebDAV
right.
starting with 2010. So there's a guy out in the PowerShell forums and on Twitter and all that, and he's blogged a few times on the Scripting Guy blog. His name is Rob Campbell. I think he's I think he's been on the PowerShell scripting podcast, maybe.
Which is an excellent podcast.
Neil Johnson took a script that he posted, and it was a gnarly, like, transport tracking log script that went out and aggregates all this data. And Neil Johnson basically shows you how to use that script from our TechNet Script
That's
Center.
Awesome.
How to figure out what the profile will be for your mailbox. He tells you, basically take the output from this, it's going to give you a CSV file, open it up in Excel, go in here, and then you end up with profile stats. You can get an idea of an average. It doesn't have to be exact, but you need to have an idea of how much mail am I really need to support, and then that's going to drive your design. That's going to drive CPU, memory, storage, all that stuff.
You know, this is an excellent resource to help get that mailbox profile, because that's obviously everybody who's going to be working with Exchange is going to have to start to figure this out. So
you can guess at these numbers, or you can use something like this to get a ballpark.
And guessing is never good.
Guessing's not good. Yeah, I mean, so this is a good idea to get a rough number. Once you have an idea of the numbers, then you can go out to msexchangeteam.com. That's the Exchange Team blog. Go to the library. Go to downloads. The latest version of the calculator will be right here, so Exchange 2013 13? Server Role Requirements Calculator. Gonna grab this guy, download it. I do think I have Excel installed, so that's a good start.
Well,
that's
a
requirement.
Well, the thing is, though, between the URL, the helpful of being able to do the mailbox profile, and then you can download the calculator and start to. I mean, this is gonna take some work to work through the calculator.
This is gonna take some significant work, because we're talking about putting your production environment on a new version of Exchange.
Right.
And like we said earlier, you can't just shotgun stuff out and hope for the best.
Right.
I've worked with a lot of customers, and I've worked with a lot of customers before at Microsoft that just build servers and kind of eyeball it. That can work, but it can also get you into trouble. So this is a very good way, even though it's going to be a little daunting at first, it's a good way to make sure you've covered everything.
Yeah, and that screen right there just scares me, but you know, they can go through, it's pretty well documented in here of what
it's well
go
documented
through, and
yeah, I mean, we could do a jump start on this calculator.
Yeah, so, exactly. So
yeah, I mean, I'm not going to go crazy with it, but essentially it's going to ask you for the inputs. You know, it's going to ask you, and a lot of the stuff may not make sense until later on today, like what are we doing for high availability and,
yeah,
and things like that. But essentially, you know, the inputs, you come in here, it defaults, you know, you've got your tiers 1 through 4, so tier 1, 2, 3, 4. You know, you might have heavy users, light users, middle of the road users. You just fill in the information that you get from the calculator, and then also some of those other features, like are we going to have archives? Do we want secondary mailboxes for people? You would put the max archive size that you want in here, and things like that. And it would figure out from a storage perspective, based on the count of mailboxes, max size, and then the daily activity, what you're going to use in IOPS, what you're going to use in storage, and then it can also give you the ability to plan with some overhead. Say, hey, give me like 20% overhead, so I can plan for the future.
So with these tools, you can plan your hardware or your virtualized environment much more accurately for your needs so that you're not scrambling later on.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of investments that have been put into this thing. So, you know, it builds scripts that'll create databases for you because it's going to spit out information on here's your database architecture and the layout and all this stuff. You know, the most simple thing is you just come over here and you can figure out what memory you would need and that kind of thing. Now, the one thing I didn't say is there's another tool that helps you calculate the CPU stuff. There's a processor query tool where you've got to plug in the processor that you're deciding to scope out. You get another spreadsheet from the Exchange Team blog. You put that number in here, and then it also figures out if you're going to have enough CPU.
The CPUs. Yeah. Well, you know what? Let's go into actually creating some of this stuff now that, you know, we've given everybody some tools to be able to do some designing and planning.
Yeah, and there's a monster blog post on the Exchange Team blog on how
on
to
how
use
to
this
use
thing.
It. Yeah.
So, you know, knock yourself out, but it's comprehensive.
Yeah,
to
definitely
say the least.
Comprehensive. Yeah. So even from small business all the way up to very large size,
right,
this tool works for.
Right.
So let's take a look at creating and some databases and some mailboxes. And quite honestly, it's just right into demo for you on, you know, I've got this Exchange server. I now need to make a database to hold some mailboxes. What do I do?
Right. So what you're going to do here is come over to servers. Now, if you did 2010, you would have seen database be under the organization configuration.
That's right.
So that really hasn't changed, but you do have to come under servers and go to databases. And you can click new here. So I've got some existing. When you install the mailbox role, you're going to get some default ones. So I've renamed these, but they had that crazy, you know, every name of the database needs to be unique. So it's going to be mailbox space, database space, some crazy random
number.
So a lot of people don't like that, so they'll rename it both in here because it has a name in, there's a name property, and then there's also the physical name on disk.
On disk, which is the EDB file, right?
Right, so on this guy, I've actually just changed the label. I've changed the name to MDB13A.
Okay, but you left the really long...
But on disk, it's the default name of mailbox database, blah, blah, blah. So if we come in here and look at that, you'll see that is in the database path.
And that's also where the default location was. Okay.
That's the default location. And we can control where the databases go, the default ones when you do an install. If you use that setup.exe, you can control that. And you know, there's switches to do all that. And don't remember if the graphical actually has an option to change that or not. I do mostly command line installs, but you can poke around in there. But this would be very... difficult in a restore scenario if I did need to go to a backup and I'm looking at like a library, a restore point or whatever, and I just see this and I'm looking for something like this.
Right.
So I typically rename these on disk as well, but I didn't go that far. So what you might do is create new mailbox database and move all the stuff that was in these other ones into it. And then you would just come in here, hit the plus sign, and then
I just want to point out to everyone that to make something new, there's this giant plus sign.
Yeah.
Now, I have to tell you that when I first, it was probably one of the betas with Exchange 2013, I first launched it, I'm like, well, how do I make a new database? Can't figure out how to, and it took me like 10 minutes to realize, well, there's this giant plus sign. I think I was looking for the word new or something.
Yeah,
I don't
know. Good point. I mean, it's very much like you would see on a tablet, right? Plus, the little pen is your edit.
Is the edit, yeah.
The trash can
is trash.
Search, refresh, yada, yada, yada. So let's create a new one. Yeah, but thanks for pointing that out, because I think I've gotten used to it now, or I don't even think about it anymore.
You don't even think about it. Yeah.
Especially when I hit delete. I don't think about that anymore. Whoops.
Don't hit delete.
Careful with that. So, you know, we'll call this one MDB. Keep up with my naming convention, 13C. Okay.
Oh, and you can choose what server.
Yep. Choose the server. And then, you know, when we get into DAGs, we can add copies and move these guys around. So that's not a big deal. And again, all of the web-based console is doing PowerShell under the hood, just like it's always done in the last two releases.
Oh, I meant to ask you that. So it's still executing all the PowerShell
That's
commands.
That's right. Okay. Exactly. So this is actually just running a commandlet called new mailbox database. It's populating a server parameter, the database file path.
And there's where you can specify the path of the database.
So
the
I probably
files.
Would, you know, not want to put it on the C drive, but here it's defaulting to that. I only have a C drive in the lab, so I'm just going to keep that. But this is where you would change it. Now, the interesting thing is if you're scripting this, this mount checkbox, this is an actual separate commandlet.
Yeah.
It's two commands, but this window is running both. So it runs the new, creates it, and then mounts the database.
Okay, and so it's new mailbox, it's new dash mailbox, and then it's mount dash mailbox, right?
Right.
Okay.
And the change between this and 2010 is that, you know, if I hit save here, in 2010, when you get to the end of a new wizard, right, you would get...
You'd get all the, it would show you the PowerShell commands, right?
Right. So you won't have that in here, but, you know, you can, like I said earlier, learn how to use the help.
Oh, and then just find every, you should do this the correct way. Now, this is kind of information. It's this is kind of nifty here. It says, restart the Exchange Information Store service after you've added a new mailbox. Why are we doing that?
Yeah, so we actually, for this release, we rewrote the entire store process and managed code. So that means it's basically was written in C++ previously, and we ported it over to C# and pretty much rebuilt it. We've gained some efficiencies there in terms of IOPS and memory management, things like that. But also, the store process works a little bit differently in terms of how databases are handled. So we have kind of like this master controller process that kind of oversees everything. And then each individual database gets its own worker process. And each database gets its own memory allocation.
Now, one of the things about that each database gets its own worker process is before, and correct me if I'm wrong, if a database had gone down or something, you could lose access to the other ones.
Yeah, so like if you lost the entire MS Exchange IS service in a previous version, that's everything. All the mailbox databases that were on that server. And here, the idea here is if you lose the process for MDB 13C, well, that database goes away, but not
everybody
else. Very similar to the way IIS works with websites, right?
As a web guy, I could say it's very similar to like app tools and worker processes, exactly.
But the thing is we need to calculate how much memory is available for each database. We can get pretty deep with that as well. I won't put you to sleep on that one, but basically the gist of it is you need to restart the service. So if you're... What's that?
To summarize, just restart the service.
Yeah, but maybe it's not quite that easy if it's production, if you're adding a database to a production server. But if you're doing all of this in the front end, building some servers,
which you should be.
Build all your databases, restart the service at the end. If it's in production, then you're going to have to schedule maintenance after you've added these
databases.
Yeah,
do a maintenance window. So restart. What's a quick way to restart that service?
Oh, man.
You know what I'm...
That's
You know what I'm saying, baby.
PowerShell. So I'm on... I'm actually sitting on... this opposite server where I created it, right? So I created it on B.
I think so.
And I'm sitting on A. So I need to restart the service remotely. That's another thing I love about Server 2012 is that remoting is just enabled by default.
Oh, God, I love that. It makes life so much easier. You don't have to...
But what if I wanted to just do it from here instead of RDP to the other machine or try to bring up the services menu?
Yeah, which RDP is bad, so let's...
Would you go PowerShell here, or would you open services and connect a remote computer name and do all that?
Oh, I would never take enough. I would never take the time to open up the graphical and do it. I'd just do it right from here.
I thought so. So what would I type?
Well, you want to get to the other machine, invoke command, and just
invoke command. Yep, that's right.
Hey, and then, man, I know a little bit about this.
Yeah, I know you do, Mr. MVP. All of a sudden, won't answer my calls at night.
Yeah, I know.
So we'll use the core, the restart service commandlet, right?
Right.
And MS Exchange IS. Okay. So we can't do a restart service-computer, can we? In this version? In version 3 or anything like that?
No, just do the dash computer name on the invoke command. And we should
Default. Yeah, I know that. But I was asking, So I knew version 2 restart service didn't have
a
dash computer.
I don't memorize anything, so yeah. I would have to do get help.
I don't know that. Yeah, no, I don't know the answer to that either. This would be hilarious if we did all this, and it actually did. But then EX2013B, restart that service. That's one way you can do it.
And I think that's a great quick way if you're not on there.
Here's how you can use help, or you can use tab completion. I guess it doesn't have that.
It doesn't have it, so we did it the right way. It's awesome.
Man, we got lucky on that one.
So now we've got a database out there. Show us some of the settings on the database, and then we got to make some mailboxes.
Yep. Cool. So real quick, we know the path. We just went with the default. I could have changed that. Obviously, it's mounted on B. We show the servers hosting a copy. So when we get into HA and we're adding copies, you'll see a list here, and you can have a list of multiple. So that's basic high level. Here's your maintenance, server maintenance. In 2010, we started doing background maintenance 24/7. And here's the thing, don't actually check this and then reboot, unless you really, really want that to happen.
Yeah, that would be.
I've had people do that, and they laugh when I tell them that, but that's actually happened to me. So. And then some other things that we'll talk about during...
As we get to high availability. Yeah.
And then, you could do per database journaling from here. But really the big stuff is the limits, like the default limits you're going to get because...
And I think this is really important because when you create the database, by default, we have limits already set.
Right.
And 2010 did this too, but, issue a warning at 1.9 gigabytes, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of important, especially when we start to look at migrations, that if you're migrating mailboxes and you've got these new mailboxes, these limits have already been set. You may need to make adjustments to these just because you're going to be migrating in mailboxes that might be outside of these limits. And these limits are they can affect your business.
They can, absolutely. Especially in the fact that we changed the way that we report on mailbox size in 2013. So we more accurately report on a mailbox size. So it's not really on disk at the database level, but you'll notice like a 30% increase roughly in the size of a reported mailbox size. So there, potentially, if you're close to that, that you have a max set and you've got limits, there's a potential there where you move people over and they're immediately past their send receive limits if you have those configured either at the database level or at the mailbox level.
And I think we should show that because these limits, guys, you definitely, everybody wants to check on these limits that we have here because, there's not only the on your screen, it's not only the issue, but we're stopping the
credit
ability
send and receive. Right, yeah, and that's the one where you got to watch out for that and make sure that you don't go over that, obviously. And then, of course, by default, these are all going to be inherited, and then you can override that on a per mailbox basis. So a lot of folks like to create databases that have their own custom settings, and VIPs have large values. And so it really depends on the organization, so you can mix it up. Some people want to do it per mailbox, so they don't inherit these settings, and there's an option on the mailbox where you can say, don't inherit the database limits, use my own custom limits.
Which we can show in a minute, but what's this keep deleted items for X amount of days? Now, I think of this as protecting the user from themselves.
Absolutely, yeah. It's just giving them the ability to go into that recover deleted items folder.
And being able to pull mail back for 14 days.
Right.
And I think the next one, I always think of this as protecting me from myself.
Right.
Keeping deleted mailboxes. So if I accidentally delete a mailbox,
yeah,
I got 30 days to bring it back.
Yeah, you can reconnect it, or you can restore data out of it into another one.
Right. I think it's the switch, though, there at the bottom, right? Don't permanently delete items until the database gets backed up.
Right, yeah.
is kind of the important one. So these limits are definitely the things that you want to start off with, checking and making sure it's right for the environment. Now, how about we make a mailbox?
A mailbox? That's easy to do. So let's get out of this. Let's go over to recipients.
And we're going to talk more about recipients in a second, but let's just do a real quick user mailbox.
Sounds good. So we'll do a user mailbox, and you could pick existing. I don't think I have any AD users that don't have a mailbox, so this screen will create a new AD user for me as well, so we'll put you in here.
Oh, hey, cool, me.
All right.
Yay.
You get to play, too. So Jason Helmick, and we could put you in a specific OU, so you're kind of a sales... type of guy.
I'm a salesy kind of guy.
I don't have IT.
Appreciate it.
I'm sorry. I don't have IT. I would have put you in there.
I mean, I'm not knocking sales guys. It's just I never, I'm an IT guy.
So here's your password. It's going to be the one you always use, right? Cupcake01?
Yeah. Cupcake01. That's the one. The password, right? I always use. Thanks.
And then since it's creating an AD user, right, we can have them reset at next logon, right, or whatever, right, and prompt them for that. And then you get more options down here. Like, you can actually put them in a database. If you don't
specify, okay.
You don't have to do that. That was a requirement in 2007. We now have an agent that runs on the server. If you don't pick one, it'll dump it in a 2013 mailbox database that's available from where you're running the tools. So a lot of the stuff, I'm just going to leave the defaults. We'll talk
about some of this is very similar to what it was in previous versions, right?
Yeah, it's very similar. So this is new mailbox. This is running the new mailbox commandlet, creating a new AD user, and mailbox enabling that user.
And
had I browsed to an existing, it would just be mailbox enable an existing AD user. So we create that. That runs out there, makes that change, runs the PowerShell commandlet.
And I have now email, right? I am now a mailbox person.
You can start sending email. So here's the other thing I want to point out real quick. If you come in here, remember we talked about the delete button? Like, take this guy, for example, and you just come in here, oh, I want to delete this mailbox. Yeah. Okay. So we said new mailbox does two things, right?
Right.
Creates a user, creates a mailbox. So when we run this delete, that's actually running remove mailbox. So that deletes the user, that deletes the mailbox. So I've had people actually say, oh, I want to just blow away the mailboxes. And then they blow away the user account. So watch out for that, because it's very easy.
This trash can is actually a serious trash can.
Yeah, if you just want to delete the mailbox or disconnect it or disable it, highlight the guy, go to disable, right, and then you're gone.
And this is really important. Disable it gets rid of the mailbox, but not the user account.
Otherwise, then you got to go into
trash. Really trashes it.
Yeah, so watch out for that. Because I've had people do that. I've actually had a guy go in and he created mailboxes for, it was piloting Exchange with the IT group. And he said, let's put all the IT users in Exchange. It was a brand new company to Exchange. So they gave him all mailboxes. And being new to Exchange, he said, oh, well, I didn't want to create mailboxes in that default database. I want to create my new database. I want to create my mailboxes in that one.
Right.
So he said, let me highlight all these and delete the mailbox. But also deleted the users.
Oops.
And AD wasn't really set up in a way that it was easy to get
to
back from
that. Recycle those back.
Yeah, so it was it was an interesting weekend for them.
Well, you know, since we're talking about recipients, let's actually move to some other recipient types now that we can make mailboxes. So we've got a slide here of a variety of recipient types. Now, we just did a user's mailbox, but we also have things, mail users and contacts, which we had in Exchange 2010, shared mailboxes. There are some interesting things here. We've got distribution groups, shared mailboxes. What's a shared mailbox?
Yeah, it's just a secondary mailbox. So instead of having to create a dummy user and all that, and creating
that
a
you
real
would have, like if you wanted to have a calendar that everybody went to
exactly.
for something.
It's just an easy way to give you a secondary mailbox that can be used by multiple people.
And resource mailboxes are things, and maybe we should show a resource mailbox, because that'd be like a room or a projector
or
can be then scheduled with a meeting or something. And it has a couple of unique policies with it.
It has some auto-accept capabilities. So you can book time with it, and then you don't have to have a delegate manage that process, which is nice. So, yeah, if you come over here in the admin center, same spot. We're in recipients. You come over to resources. And, there's nothing in here yet.
It's the plus button, Mike.
Oh, yeah. Plus. There you go. So new room, new equipment. So we're going to say this is a conference room. All right, so this is simple. We'll keep it short. CR62 for Jason's age. No, I'm just kidding.
Ow!
That's
thanks, appreciate that.
I was just trying to think of something funny. I hope that one didn't hurt too bad.
Yeah.
So we gave it a name. We can put it in OU. We can put it in a location. So, we can put it here in Redmond. We can add the capacity, 50 people. Here's the thing where we can automatically book meetings, so auto-accept, or you can have individual delegates manage it old school style where they open the calendar
and accept the meetings, or they
get the meeting requests and accept or deny. But we'll just do auto, as it's easy. And my save button here is a little hard to get to because of my screen resolution, but there we go.
Yay, got a room resource. Now,
so it's got some different properties than you would have in a regular mailbox. So you've got some additional capabilities, you've got some we talked about the delegates, but you got policies, booking options. How long do you want to have a booking window for? A lot of people don't want to have never-ending recurring items because those can get corrupt really easy. So you want to have kind of like some control over that kind of stuff. And, you might want to have people do some extra stuff. So you got all those options in here.
Well, along with these recipients, let's talk about address lists and the email addresses that people get for a second, because this is something that, you know, can get a little bit kind of strange. First of all, address lists. We've got some default address lists. These are pretty much the same they've been in versions of Exchange, hints, and, you know, we've got the GAL, the global address list that has everything in it. And then we've got these default address lists, you know, if you want to show us the contact. And you can make your own address list, right?
Yeah, you can. And then the nice thing is you can use filtering capabilities to key off of a certain attribute. So maybe you want to put all of the users in sales and a sales list. And then your salespeople can go into, instead of scrolling through the entire GAL, just pick the sales address list and just see those recipients.
Now, the thing is and correct me if I'm wrong, I think this may have come out in a service pack, or maybe it just came out with 2010. And I'm having a hard time with this. You hear guys talk about this thing called GAL segmentation. Now, you don't actually have to demonstrate that. I want you to create an address list for us. But what is GAL segmentation? I mean, the GAL, doesn't it just hold everything? I mean, so if I've got a corporation with 120,000 people that are spread across the world, I got 120,000 things in the GAL.
Yep. Yeah. So GAL segmentation is meant different things. You know, and there was a process in older versions of Exchange that you would go through. Now we have something called address book policies, but really what it gives you is some isolation. Hosting environment is a perfect example or use case for this, where you've got multiple organizations being hosted in one Exchange environment, but you don't want them to see anybody really but themselves. So I want to see you guys in my group, and we have an address book policy for contoso.com, but I don't want to see fabricam.com, now, even though we're all in the same Exchange
so organization. So as I understand it, what you're basically doing is, because you got these different companies in the GAL segmentation lets you kind of isolate, so you only see what's in yours.
Yeah.
But it's not a security boundary, right? So, I mean, it's basically a filter or something like that.
Pretty much a filter.
Okay. Yeah, so. But it can be done if you have the larger kind of stuff. Why don't you show us the address list and making an address list?
Sure.
Just real quick.
You bet.
And then we'll do some. An email address policy on a user.
Sure. So let's run in here real quick. I already went to organization address list.
Oh yeah. Okay. There. It's all the address lists.
Yeah. Here's all the ones in there.
There's the GAL.
So I already navigated over there. I'm a step ahead of you.
So if you wanted to make something for like the sales group.
Right. So we'll just do a quick add here. We'll do sales. You know, they give you some ability to do some filtering, so you can say all recipient types. You can just do people with mailboxes only.
Which, in the case of the sales group, let's do humans with.
Sure.
I mean, salespeople are humans too, so
yeah, sort of.
We should be nice to them. And
everybody in the room is now confused by that statement.
I know. got a whole bunch of people in the room kind of looking at me like, "Oh, you can't wait till we get you offline."
Can't wait to that sales call after the MVA today.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be great.
So, you know, you can also come in here and do some additional filtering where you pick a little drop down here.
So you could do like department is sales, and that's an Active Directory attribute.
Right. Yeah, so if we pick department, here's a little screen where, hey, let's get everybody with sales with that setting in department. So it's up to AD to update that. So if it's the AD guys, it's their responsibility, but you know, as you provision your users, if you're also the AD guy or gal, then you gotta keep those up to date, and you might have some provisioning process that defines all that. But basically what we've said here is this is gonna be really a filtered view. Just people with Exchange mailboxes that have that department attribute set to that value.
And that's great. That'll make us now that address list that people can select and only see that.
And then basically just says, hey, you know,
you gotta run update. Yeah.
But, and then you can preview it, in a number of ways. You know, if we jumped into OWA, we would see it. You can preview this in the shell. Here's a preview recipients link right here.
And you probably don't have anybody.
Oh,
you do have some people that are marked sales.
Yeah. How about that?
I'm impressed. I'm very impressed. Okay, good. So we can see a preview of what our results are going to be, make sure the query works.
Exactly.
Okay.
So now we know that our AD settings are right for these guys, that there's a match there. So we know it's working the way it's supposed to. So that's
good. So I got address list. Now I need, what email address did I get? And this is one of the things that kind of gets me is, and I have to say, just to let everybody know, the production team has just put something on the teleprompter that says, I'm going to get lynched because of the sales comment. This is hilarious. I just look. So, here's the thing. I when you created the mailbox for recipients, we get an email address. You might have additional email addresses that you need as well. And this is where things can get a little bit tricky. So I know we're going to hit this several times today, but can you show us what the user's email address is and how we can add another one, even though we're going to have to maybe mention that accepted domains thing, which we really want to talk about later, but we'll mention it real quick.
Sure. Yeah. So I had to click around a little bit because, you know, like I said, I'm an exchange guy. So
no, that's
like,
okay. If you like, don't know what you're doing, like, it just shows the rest of us that we all need to use PowerShell because...
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
You'll see me clicking through here like, is it here? No, is it here? But you come down here under Mailflow. It makes sense, right? It's part of your email
address. It's part of Mailflow. And by the way, this is where a lot of the former transport service stuff was is done. And so same thing.
So here's our default policy. It's supplying the... We're Contoso.com, so here's the email address format. Right, so we could modify this existing policy. We could create another one if we wanted to.
Yeah, okay, just modify this one so you can just kind of show us. Because, I mean, if you've worked with Exchange before, you've seen this.
So right now it's alias. We could change it to John.Smith.
So whatever your naming convention is.
Right, if you're populating the first and last, instead of defaulting to that. We could update this. I mean, we've already got users that are stamped with this policy, so I'm probably not going to... When we get into transport, we're going to be adding another domain and things like that. And, you know, if you're coming from another version, you probably aren't going to need to touch this. If you're setting up Exchange from scratch, then you may need to think about email address policies and things like that.
So,
But if you needed to create one from scratch, you could come in here, create a new one, and you would just basically populate it with the domain and format.
Policy name.
My policy. Here, pick your format. I mean, it's very simple. You go through and fill out the information.
And here's the part that we're going to
Since we don't have another domain, you just get the one that's there.
Yeah, and this is the part that we're going to be talking about later on when we get to transport setting up a real accepted domain because...
Right. Yeah, you get
and
the
then
idea.
Whatever that is.
And it'll run through and basically apply that.
Oh, come
apply
on. Go ahead
and
apply it just so we can see it on someone, please. Yeah.
And then we're not going to do it on everybody. We'll just do it on a few people here. We'll do...
Chicken. What, now you're only going to pick like a couple of people? Come on, man.
Just add a rule and then do... This time we'll do finance.
Yeah, please, for the love of God, don't make fun of salespeople. There we go. Finance? Okay. How can I not make fun of... No.
So here's the thing of why I was trying to avoid that. References a domain that isn't configured as an accepted domain. We're going to hit that in transport, so we'll show that.
But I think this is real important, though, because you can't just go in and start adding domains that you want people to receive email on until you've done it properly by first making it an accepted domain. And actually, I'm really glad you did that because we're going to hit, when we hit the transport on how to create accepted domains, then you go back and add it into the policies. I think a lot of guys make this mistake. That's why I wanted you to show it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's something you got to think about.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, we've talked about a lot of stuff in this section. As a matter of fact, I've got a summary slide, but quite honestly, we talked about the new tools, the graphical tool and
The tools are the biggest change. I mean, the web-based tool. PowerShell stuff, if you're doing that, it's pretty similar.
Your trick on getting PowerShell to be able to pull the Exchange stuff over, I think, is awesome. And I keep calling it your trick because your blog post has been out. You did this with 2010 and all that. It's been out forever. And it's just real popular. But I think using PowerShell implicit remoting to bring those commandlets over when you need it is important. So you got the tools now. Obviously, you know, the graphical is greatly improved in my opinion, but PowerShell is still probably going to be the way to go on a lot of things in bulk, right?
Bulk administration is going to be key for, you know, PowerShell.
You gave us some hints on coming up with a mailbox profile, some tools for that, and for using the calculator for storage requirements.
Yeah, and we also looked at the profile analyzer script.
Yeah, that's
from Neil Johnson. So check
which
that out
is
as well.
Very helpful for the planning stages. Now, if you're just in a lab right now, you can forego those. But when you certainly want to move,
yeah, when you get into deploying and planning,
and let's face it, making a mailbox database. Not that hard. Making a recipient, not that hard.
That's right.
So pretty much, that's awesome. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take another 10-minute break at this point, and I think we dive into the CAS role. I'm not even sure what we dive into next, but this was a great start on mailbox databases and getting recipients started. So after somebody hits me, lynches me or whatever because of the sales comment, we'll be back in 10, and then we'll go on from there.
Perfect.